From Hollywood, this is Out of My Mind. Hello, I'm Jay Douglas, and this is the first episode of a show which I would describe as a show about everything. You know, thanks to technology, we can bounce from place to place looking for essential information, non-essential information, and my personal favorite, curiously essential information. For example, in today's show, we're going to the dark side of the internet where spam lives. We're going to Seattle, Washington for a discussion about a reading practice I find strange. And we're going to 1966. Okay, that one takes a little explaining, but bear with me. We'll do it all in about 17 minutes with new shows online every Saturday at 8 a.m. Eastern. I'm a baby boomer, and what we talk about will make a lot of sense to baby boomers. Now, if you're not a baby boomer, you're certainly invited to be part of the show. However, for your own safety, I would suggest you keep Wikipedia nearby or listen with a baby boomer relative so you can keep up with some of the cultural references. Don't be concerned. This is normal. It's all part of growing up. Those are the rules. So depending upon how you count, episode one is either about a minute old or it starts right now.
One of the big problems is you have a lot of information coming from many, many, many different places and normally not the same place twice.
That's Rob Groom. He's with the University of Southern California. I got in contact with him because I was really curious. Why is it the greatest country in the world? I mean, we're the country that put a man on the moon. We're the country that invented the French dip sandwich. We can't stop Svetlana from writing me and telling me what she's going to do to me if I was to get Viagra or whatever. It seems that we have an army of technicians and an army of scientists, and yet the spam just keeps on coming. And what Rob said was, you know, forget the scientists and forget the technicians. We probably should be training plumbers.
It's kind of like an old pipe. You have an old pipe in your house, and it's got a little pin leak in it. So you go over and you put your finger on the leak, and then that pressure causes it to spring somewhere else. And then you get another one, and another one, and another one, and another one. And that's sort of the problem that you're dealing with. You plug one hole and 50 more spring up. You plug those holes and 1,000 more spring up.
But aren't we the people who invented the internet? Don't we kind of know where all the wires and the dials and the gauges and the switches are? Can't we just kind of pull the plug on these spammers?
Well, you can, but they'll just pop up somewhere else. It happens all the time. They find where some of these things are happening and they'll shut them down and only to find out later that they have 15 other computers in 9 different places that are doing the same thing.
I'm getting the picture here that we don't need plumbers. We need people who are really good at whack-a-mole. It seems to me all that was left, and I brought this up with Rob, is, you know, click on the unsubscribe button and hope for the best, and maybe Svetlana will get the message.
Well, that's very controversial, actually, as far as I'm concerned, because I've done that as a test on an email I created just to try this. Within the next probably 6 weeks, 5 times the amount of email that I was receiving before I told them to unsubscribe. So that's also another way that these companies verify who you are, is if you don't want to be here, unsubscribe, please, because now we'll know that you actually received our email. So sometimes it's better to just delete the email and not worry about it.
Okay. Given that Svetlana is going to be with us for a long time, Rob has generously offered some tips for avoiding becoming a victim of spam scam and also avoiding contributing to spam. You can find Rob's tips on our show notes. Simply go to bit.ly/OOMM123. Then click on episode one and follow the links to show notes. There is a practice that many baby boomers and even some pre-baby boomers will be engaging in over the summer. I will not be one of them. It's the practice of going back and rereading the great books that we were forced to read in 11th grade. For me, once was enough, and once mostly consisted of Cliff's Notes. I thought, well, I'd reach out to Holly Myers. She's with the Elliott Bay Book Company in Seattle, Washington, and ask her if she thought there was any value in doing something like this.
It's absolutely valuable to reread the classics that you read as a young person, especially as we get older, because the books haven't changed, but our life experiences have changed. And so the richness that comes from those books is so much more poignant and personal to us as we reread them. For example, I just recently went back to Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's book. And I have to tell you, it made so much more sense to me as an adult, well past childhood, what she's talking about as far as the creation of life and what a feat it was and why this was so important and so precious and also so hideous. And it, to me, it just made so much more sense than when I was a teenager and I was like, yeah, yeah, it's really gross. He put a bunch of dead parts together and animated them. So what? But as a 50-plus woman, the idea that she had behind it of the creation of life and the spark of life was so much more resonant for me.
On the off chance that I'm in the minority on this, I asked Holly if she could give us some suggestions of where to start.
I would say Don Quixote, because there is so much humor to that. And, you know, he's not a young man either. that I think the humor, I think, gets really lost on the young people. The young people, that's capital T and Y and yes. So Don Quixote would be one. I would definitely recommend rereading Frankenstein. I think it is just such a beautiful book. I can't speak highly enough of it. And I think the third book I would pick, I might actually go outside of the realm of classics for a minute and tell people to reread Dandelion Wine. Ray Bradbury's book on childhood and innocence is so timeless and so, again, I'm going to use the word poignant because I don't know if kids today appreciate or know the wild ways that we had when we grew up before we were attached to iPods and iPhones and iThis and iThat, that we, when summer came, we just run amok. I would definitely say Dandelion Wine, too.
I might give Holly Dandelion Wine, but only because I'm a big Ray Bradbury fan. If she had said Silas Marner, she would have been off the show. Holly Myers is a book buyer for the Elliott Bay Book Company in Seattle, Washington. This is one of the truly great American independent bookstores. If you cannot visit Seattle and the store itself over the summer, at least you can visit them online. They have a great website, and I'll put a link to that website in the show notes. In 1966, Batman, the one with Adam West, was sweeping the nation. It was one of the biggest television phenomenons since, well, probably since Davy Crockett in the 1950s. In Chicago, radio station WCFL wanted to create some superhero excitement of its own among its listeners, and they asked production manager Dick Orkin to create some kind of superhero character. It turned out the character Dick created became a phenomenon of its own. At the height of its popularity, Orkin's Chicken Man was heard on over 300 radio stations in the United States and around the world on Armed Forces Radio. With the 50th anniversary of Chicken Man waiting in the wings, yeah, I do know what I just said, I thought it was time to brush up on our Chicken Manology. So here's question one. Why a chicken? Yeah, that's what I thought. You know, you're not going to find the answer in the first Chicken Man episode, the one that's easy to find on the internet. Orkin didn't get around to telling the story until episode 3, which is much more difficult to locate. So now, for the first time in maybe decades, an official internet presentation of why mild-mannered shoe salesman Benton Harbor selected the chicken to become the most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
Benton Harbor, employed as a shoe salesman for a large downtown department store, spends his weekends, his only 2 days off, striking terror into the hearts of criminals everywhere as the white-winged warrior called Chicken Man. How did it come about that Benton Harbor, weekend-winged warrior, selected the visage of the chicken in his crusade against the forces of evil? Now it can be told.
Yes, may I help you?
How do you do?
I'm looking for a costume.
What did you have in mind?
Something that will strike terror into the hearts of criminals everywhere.
I see. Well, how about this?
No, I don't think so.
Why not try it on?
Very well.
Here, I'll help you.
Thank you.
There you are. Now, take a look in the mirror.
Not bad. I wonder if you would permit me to conduct a quick experiment outside this store.
Certainly.
Pardon me, sir.
Yeah?
Are you by chance a vicious criminal?
Uh-huh.
Fine. Would you take a look at this costume I'm wearing?
Yeah.
Do you feel anything strange? Anything at all?
Yeah.
And what is that?
I'd like to kiss you.
Kiss me?
Yeah.
How do you account for that?
Because you look like an adorable bunny rabbit.
Well, how did it go?
What else do you have?
A teddy bear and a chicken.
A teddy bear?
It'd be cute.
Wrap up the chicken, please.
You can read more about Dick Orkin and Chicken Man in the show notes. My thanks to Dick and Dee Dee Orkin for making this episode available for us to share. We all listen to Chicken Man on AM radio because it's all we had. But do you listen to AM anymore? You might want to tune in, at least for old time's sake, because it's possible that in a few years, nobody will be listening to AM. I want you to listen to three stories and see if any of them resonate with you. The first is from Jack Leary. He runs a mobile music service in San Diego. The second is from Mary Quas. She's the CEO of NRG Broadcasting, which operates 42 radio stations throughout the Midwest. Finally, Neil Ross, a former Top 40 disc jockey and now a sought-after voiceover artist in Los Angeles.
AM radio meant a lot to me back then as a kid because it brought the outside world to you. Being from a small town in West Virginia, it took maybe a couple of months for things that were really hopping out here on the West Coast to filter back to the towns in the Midwest and the East Coast.
I grew up with AM radio. I mean, my first radio stations that I remember as a kid was Top 40, and it was AM, and I can tell you like it was yesterday that the jock would be on the air, and we'd be all at the beach, and he'd tell you it was 20 minutes, time to turn over if you're laying in the sun, and the entire beach would turn over.
My big hero was on at night from 9 to midnight, a guy named Bill Balance. And one night, he got on the air and he started to talk. It was about 11:45 at night, and he started to talk about what he was going to do when he got off the air. He was going to get into his brand new sports car, pick up his new starlet girlfriend who was under contract to Warner Brothers, and together they were going to cruise the Strip. Now, I wasn't entirely sure what the Strip was or how you went about cruising it. All I knew was Bill Balance was having the life I wanted to have.
For Jack, Mary, and Neil, their adolescent years, and in some cases their careers, were shaped by their relationship with AM radio. For me, it was Dan Ingram, a legendary New York disc jockey who inspired me to enter the radio business. If you grew up in the 50s, 60s, or 70s, there's a good chance your life was shaped by AM radio, too. So when I read in online posts and trade magazines that the broadcasting industry was seriously considering killing off AM radio, I gasped. This was more than nostalgia. This was like finding out my dog was going to die. I wanted to know why AM radio had to go and what could be done to save it. I called Dean Sorensen. Before he retired, Sorensen operated 17 radio stations across the Dakotas, Minnesota, and Iowa, about half of them AM.
In some minor fashion, AM has fallen out of step as a hip media.
So AM radio is a little frayed around the edges, aren't we all? Mary Quas doesn't believe that AM's older audience should be ignored.
People who grew up with AM radio to get their news and information and continue to use that source is a market that needs to be served.
But not everyone agrees with Quas. Holland Cook is a nationally known radio consultant specializing in news, talk, and sports formats. Most of his clients are on AM, and he described what he hears from sponsors.
The feedback is AM and they yawn.
Okay, that's a problem. Without revenue coming in, Broadcasters are hesitant to hire local on-the-air talent when they can acquire syndicated programs at a lower cost. Quast says that translates into programming that favors large corporations over local communities.
Airing 4 hours of Rush Limbaugh every day, or the Bob and Tom show, or, you know, you pick, used to be IMS and some of the syndicated national programs. But the primary focus is more a distribution outlet than it is to serve the communities.
It seems AM radio is having its own senior moment and forgetting how successful it was when it focused on building communities. This was not what I wanted to hear, and neither was this. The station you hear, or almost hear, under all that static is not some romantic distant signal from Chicago, Denver, or Salt Lake City. It's a Las Vegas radio station, and I recorded it in Las Vegas, in a hotel room just off the Strip. If you could hear a Las Vegas AM radio station anywhere, it ought to be in the heart of the city's hotel and gaming district. Apparently Mother Nature has other ideas. Dean Sorensen explains.
As the environment has changed with interference items, whether it be computers or LED lights or whatever, or Wi-Fis or whatever else goes through the air, all of this seems to affect AM broadcast. And it's harder and harder to get signals into steel buildings, underground tunnels, highway tunnels, and places where there's not clear and good ground conductivity.
Listeners? Sponsors? Mother Nature? I wanted to find someone who was on AM radio's side. I decided to go to the top, to the Federal Communications Commission and FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai. I asked him his opinion of AM radio.
I think there's a hold that AM radio has on the American populace, driving across the country and catching a faraway baseball game, for example, that still really captures the imagination.
I pointed out that being nostalgic for AM isn't going to save it. And he responded with something that gave me a little hope for AM's future.
I think AM radio continues to be the audible core of our national culture.
Unfortunately, the audible core of our national culture is on life support. There are plenty of ideas for saving AM, but none of them seem to result in the AM radio that shaped us. And a couple of them require throwing out our AM radios entirely. We'll look at whether the cure will be worse than the disease next week in part two of this story. I hope you'll all join me anytime after 8 a.m. Eastern next Saturday for episode two of Out of My Mind. And between now and then, feel free to... let's make that a homework assignment. Go to bit.ly/OOMM123 and click on episode one, and you'll find a number of ways to keep in touch with the show. So if you have a comment, a suggestion for a guest, yes, you can suggest yourself, or, you know, a topic that you're curious about, pass it along. If you do well, you'll be excused from the quiz. Thanks for hanging out with me. I'm Jay Douglas, and we'll talk next week. Out of My Mind is produced by Larice Summers and is a production of the Theater of Your Mind, Incorporated, Hollywood, California.